Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 12. It'll be texts 9 and 10. 9 doesn't have a purport, so I'll just chant that and read the translation, and then 10 we'll do together. I think, is 10 written up on the board there? Okay. All right. Ajasaho balam pranam amritam ritchum evacha tam agnaya janohetum atmanam manyate jadam. Translation. Our sensory prowess, mental power, bodily strength, living force, immortality, and mortality are all subject to the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not knowing this, foolish people think the dull material body to be the cause of their activities. So this is Vritrasura speaking, I believe. Okay, now this one we could do together. Yata daru mai nadi. Yata pratra mayo mriga. Evam bhutani maghavan. Isha tantrani vidibo. Yata daru mai nari. Yata patra mayo mriga. Evam bhutani maghavan. Isha tantrani vidibo. Yata daru mai nari. Yata patra mayo mriga. Evam bhutani maghavan. Isha tantrani vidibo. Ladies. Yataha, just as, darumai, made of wood, nari, a woman, yataha, just as, patramaya, made of leaves, mriga, an animal, evam, thus. Bhutani, all things. Magavan, O King Indra. Isha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tantrani, depending upon. Bidhi, please know. Bo, O Sir. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O King Indra, as a wooden doll that looks like a woman, or as an animal made of grass and leaves cannot move or dance independently, but depends fully on the person who handles it, all of us dance according to the desire of the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead. No one is independent. Purport. This is confirmed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 5, Text 142. Ikale Ishvara Krishna Arasaba Britya Yare Yaiche Nachaya Se Taiche Kare Nirtya. Lord Krishna alone is the Supreme Controller, and all others are His servants. They dance as He makes them do so. End quote. We are all servants of Krishna. We have no independence. We are dancing according to the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but out of ignorance and illusion, we think we are independent of the Supreme Will. Therefore it is said, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all, and has no other origin, for He is the prime cause of all causes. Brahma Samhita, Chapter 5, Text 1. Om Agena Timanam Dasha Dinanjana Shalakaya Chakshuna Militamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So a lot of things have happened to bring us to this point. Just to maybe, you know, recap a few of the significant details of this amazing pastime. It starts off with Indra and the heavenly planets. Indra is with his consort, his wife, and he's in his, like, assembly, and is receiving some sort of worship and glorification from the other members there, you know, the other residents of the heavenly planets, the other demigods, I suppose, right? And what happened was Indra's spiritual master happened to come in while that was going on, while he was being glorified and worshipped by these, you know, other people. And he neglected his spiritual master, Brihaspati, because he was just all proud. You know, Brihaspati could understand that that was the reason why he was neglecting him, that he was just absorbed in the subtle sense gratification of being worshipped, being glorified, being praised like that, and he didn't. Even if he noticed him, probably noticed him, but he just thought, oh, so it's just Brihaspati, just my spiritual master. So it doesn't actually specifically say, but he did neglect him. And as a result, Brihaspati left. He just disappeared. Not only he just left that assembly, and they couldn't find him. Now, they went looking for him, but they couldn't find him. And he did that deliberately because he wanted to, and that was a form of, you know, teaching him a lesson. He had to punish him and teach him a lesson that you can't be puffed up, you know, when your spiritual master comes. You have to always be humble in the presence of your spiritual master. So, you know, from this, we learn a very important lesson that attitude is a very significant thing. You know, Prabhupada sometimes would say thinking, he'd give us this idea of thinking, feeling, willing. You know, it's something, it starts with a thinking stage and then it develops to a feeling stage and then willing or acting. And in the Bhagavad Gita, there's that famous sequence of verses in the second chapter, Dhyayato Visayan Pumsam. Sangat teshu bhajayate, sangat sanjayate kama, kama krodha bhajayate. Krodha bhavati samohat, samohat smriti vibhramsad, smriti bhramsad, buddhinaso, buddhinasat pranashati. So it goes, by contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment. From such attachment, lust arises. From lust, anger develops. From anger, krodha bhavati samohat, from anger comes illusion, samohat smriti vibhramsad. From then illusion, the intelligence is bewildered, and then it goes smithi bramsad buddhinasa. When the intelligence is, when memory is lost, then intelligence is lost, and then buddhinasa pranashati. Then when one loses the intelligence, he falls down. So you see, it all starts from an attitude, what you're deciding to contemplate, contemplating the objects of the senses. Right? And then so many things happen as a result. So many consequences are there. So we have to be very careful. We have to watch what we're thinking about. We have to watch our attitude. I'll give you a great example of this. Just a very fresh example. And maybe some of you might be aware of this example. Yesterday morning, I was coming across the street just before 4:30 to be the pujari for Mangalarti. And as I'm walking across the street, I look to my right, and I'm like, what? There was like three police cars between 12 and 18 policemen there. And I was going, what the heck is going on? But, as usual, I was just kind of running right down to the minute there, so I didn't have time to walk over there and, find out. But I found out later from Nikatma, it was Purudas. Apparently, I didn't get a chance to talk to him to confirm all this, but I could just imagine, what took place. Nikatma told me Puru doesn't really have a great attitude towards police. He's not really a big fan of the police. So the police he was chanting, we see him chanting outside a lot up and down the street. And probably somebody called up, maybe somebody in one of the apartments further down the block, or even somebody in a car driving by. Everybody's got a cell phone now. And, obviously, if you're not used to it, it does look a little bit strange to see somebody walking up and down the street with, their hand in a bag with a finger sticking out. They don't know what they were doing. So they just rang up thinking, hey, there's some guy there. Maybe it's a little unusual, So the police come around. That's their job. They have to follow up on complaints. And I can just imagine, the scenario when they came around, they just probably pulled up next to him and said, hey, what's going on? And, if he would have said if you don't respond humbly, then that's like a red flag for the police. Police, their job is to make sure, establish law and order. You got to cooperate with them. Otherwise, you're going to have a problem. And apparently that's what he didn't do that. He must have said something like, what's the problem? Something like that. All you have to do is just say something like that. Well, why? What's the problem? And they go, what do you mean, what's the problem? And then it escalates. You see? So, what started off is like a simple little thing. He could have just said, I have this happen to me all the time, not to criticize Puru, but, because on our traveling Sankirtan, I'll be chanting out in the parking lot from someplace, And all the time, somebody from one of the stores or some customer rings up and some police car comes and they come up to me and they go, hey, what's going on? What are you up to, And so I'm a monk. I'm chanting on these beads, prayer beads. They're like rosary beads, and I'm chanting a prayer on this. And I do it every morning. I'm a member of the Hare, I just tell them. I just, try to humbly explain to them that it's okay. I understand why you're coming out, and I'm not, but this is what I'm doing. And they go, okay. Because we had somebody call up. They thought that you were, they thought you were having a problem or something like that. They're nice. If you're kind of polite, they're polite. But if you get uptight and you get like, defensive, then okay, it's on. And that's what happened yesterday morning, obviously. So, he didn't respond in the right way. He didn't have the right attitude, the humble, submissive attitude towards the authority. And as a result, three police cars were out there, and there was about 18 police out there. Did you see him? Did anybody else see him besides me? Nikatma saw him. And, I just saw him. And there he was. He was against the police car, and I'm like, he had to stand against the police car like that with his hands up, and two of the policemen, one policeman on either side were there holding, make sure he didn't, try to move around to do anything, take a swing at anybody, and one of them was patting him down just to make sure he didn't have any weapons. And apparently they didn't even arrest him, because after Mangalarti, after I did my, deity worship there, I came out, go back to my apartment to change clothes again, and he was out there chanting. So they didn't even take him away, they didn't even arrest him, you see? So but because he had, the wrong attitude, that whole big thing happened. You see? So this is an analogy here. Attitude's very important. And it's actually because of having the wrong attitude that we're here in the material world. This material world is just a place for the people with attitude problem. We're all people with an attitude. Everybody you see here in this material world is because they had an attitude problem in the spiritual world. And it's a very nice verse which explains this. It's from the... it's found in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's actually a verse from Jagadananda Pandit's, I believe, what's it called, Prema? I can't remember the name of the work. But it's a book by Jagadananda Pandit. And it's quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it goes, Krishna bahir mukahaya boga vanchakare nikatishta mayatare japatiyadare. Translation is, as soon as one becomes inimical to Krishna and desires sense gratification, he is immediately struck down by the illusory energy of the Lord. So that's the prose translation. And if you go to the word-to-word translation, you get a little further insight. It goes, Krishna Bahir Mukha, inimical to Krishna. But actually, Drudakarma, in a class he gave back some time ago, explained that the word Bahir Mukha, literally, the literal translation for that, it means you're turning your face like that, turning your head away from. Because Bahir means the back, and Mukha means face or mouth. Like one name for Krishna is Kachori Mukha, Kachori face or Kachori mouth, because he loves kachoris and he was always eating kachoris, and so they call them Kachori Mukha. So in other words, when one turns their back, or one turns the back of the head to Krishna, you turn away from Krishna, that's translated here as being inimical to Krishna, and becomes interested in sense gratification, then the other interesting word for it in translation here is nikatishta, means standing nearby. See, and as Maya, the illusory energy, she's standing nearby. You see, so as soon as one develops that, allows the service attitude to deteriorate, because, we're in the spiritual world, we're all meant to be very obedient and affectionate servants to Krishna. You see? And our free will is that we keep that attitude. But if we allow that attitude to deteriorate, and we decide that we're not going to be obedient, affectionate servants to Krishna, and we allow some other attitude to develop, then nikatashta, standing nearby, is Maya. And then what happens? Japati adale, slaps down. Maya, that's it. You're immediately going to get, pulled up, just like Puru, same thing. As soon as the attitude's off, then Maya's there. And she's what? I think you need a little bit of re-education. And then you come here to the material world. And this is a place where you're going to, where people, the souls who had the wrong attitude of trying to be educated again. And then, of course, that education involves some punishment, some tough love. Just like the word, this material world sometimes refers to as a penitentiary. So that word penitentiary is an interesting word, because penance is the root of that word, penitentiary. Penitentiary is a place where you go to be punished and learn a lesson through that punishment, a penitentiary. By doing penance, you're gonna learn something. See? So attitudes, it's a serious thing. We have to be very careful to make sure we have a favorable service attitude, and we don't allow that to deteriorate, because the consequences can be extremely drastic. Okay? So as Indra experienced, as Puru experienced yesterday morning, as Indra experienced here, because what happened was, after he neglected his spiritual master, Brihaspati, and he went away, the demigods were without a spiritual master, and they became defeated by the demons. The demons they're always like a rivalry between the demigods and the demons in the Swargaloka. So the demons could understand that they were, and weakened because of the absence of their spiritual master, so they were taking advantage of that opportunity. So the demigods were able to acquire another spiritual master. His name was Vishvarup, and he had three heads. We've been hearing this over the last couple months, or at least all you have. I've been away. And the thing with him was that his father, Tvasta, was a demigod, but his mother was a demon. His mother was actually from the Asuras. And so he had affection for both families. He had affection for the demigods, and he had affection for the demons. And when he was performing the sacrificial, fires, that's what the priest does, performing the on behalf of the demigods, he was offering oblations to the demigods, Indra, Swaha, Agni, Swaha, like that. But like, he was just slipping in a few oblations to the demons on the side there, quietly. Hopefully he was thinking unbeknownst to anybody else, but Indra was able to, understand that that's what he was doing. And Indra cut off his three heads. He had three heads, Vishvarup. And Indra cut off his three heads, and he realized he made a mistake, but, once again, that's Indra. He kind of acted in the mode of passion. So the father of Vishvarup, his name was Tvasta, he was, upset. He didn't think this was very good, because Indra, they made him the priest, and now, due to a slight discrepancy, Indra butchered him, basically. He chopped off his three heads. And so Tvasta, he did a jugya to produce a personality that would be the enemy of Indra. you know, basically somebody who could kill Indra. But what happened was, when he was performing that sacrifice, he mispronounced just one syllable. He said something. He made a short A, a long A, or vice versa. I can't remember. You know, he just one little mistake he made. And what happened was, he got he got the opposite effect. You know, so that's it was mentioned in the purport. That's what happens in these karmakanda sacrifices, that, you know, if you just make one little mistake, you get a contrary effect. So you have to be very careful about, at least they have to be very careful about pronouncing the mantras correctly. Of course, our pronunciation of, our chanting of mantras is not in that same category. We're not chanting mantras to get some, you know, materially desirable result. But still, we should try to be a little bit careful in pronouncing mantras. Like, for instance, I noticed, I'm not trying to set myself up as an authority on how to pronounce Sanskrit or any of the mantras. This was brought to my attention because I was doing it wrong, and so I'd like to share this with everybody else. In the morning, when we chant the prayers to the Lord in the Sringadev, the correct way to pronounce this part of the prayer is Ito Nishring Ha, Parato Nishring Ho. Yato Yato Yamitato Nishring Ha. I'm reading it right from the book, just in case nobody doesn't think I'm speculating. Okay. Bahir Nishring Ho, Ridaye Nishring Ho, Nishring Hamadim Saranam Papadye. So it's A-O-A-O-O. If you to help you remember. A-O-A-O-O. I knew you were going to say that. So that's what I said. That's why I did my disclaimer. I'm not setting myself up as an authority on pronouncing Sanskrit. I have a tough enough time with the English language, but I knew Archie was going to get me on that one. But anyway, so, you know, probably each of us is aware of some little thing like that that everybody else is doing, and I guess we could all, you know, bring it to each other's attention, and this way we can become a little bit more pukka in our pronunciation of these prayers that we chant every day. You know, actually, one way we could all just improve probably 50 to 90% right away is all the translations in the Psalm book, the phonetic translations. You know, if you just carefully go and look and see what, you know, the shring ha, oh, it's A-H, means ah. The H-O means ho. You see, they're all phonetic translations, so it's not like you got to be a Sanskrit scholar to figure out how to pronounce it. You just have to kind of read carefully. You just have to know the English language and read carefully and just kind of try it, you know, try to pronounce it as it's spelled there, basically. So it's all phonetic. It means it's pronounced as it sounds. It sounds as it's... did I say that right? It's pronounced as it's spelled. You see? There's no trick to it. Okay, so moving on. So then... Vritrasura came out. And he was... instead of being the personality that was going to be the enemy to Indra, it came the other way around. Indra was his enemy. And he was an incredible, you know, huge, monstrous type of demon. The word Vritta actually means one who covers everything. And even shortly after he appeared, there was a skirmish between him and the demigods. And he swallowed all their weapons. That was mentioned in, you know, one of the earlier chapters, just to give you an idea how big and how powerful he was. He swallowed their weapons. So the demigods realized that they were no match for this guy. So immediately they took shelter of Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu appeared first in their heart, and then he actually appeared physically before them. And he gave them instructions. So they offered some very nice prayers. The demigods, when they're in trouble, they're very good at taking shelter of of Vishnu to get help. They know how to do that pretty good. And then when times are good, then they just forget all about him, basically. But when things get a little bit precarious, then they're very good at taking shelter and offering very, very nice prayers, you know. And Lord Vishnu was pleased by their prayers. And then they told them what their problem, they related to Lord Vishnu what the problem was. And Lord Vishnu gave them a solution. He and in his response, he regretted that they didn't pray for pure devotional service. They just prayed for a way to get out of their, like, the predicament they were in. But anyway, he told them how to do that. So he advised them to go to this great muni named Didichi. Also, Didanchya or Didichi, he had both, he was called both, and asked for his bones. And and they could use those bones to make a thunderbolt. Don't ask me what the connection is between bones and thunderbolts, but anyway, that was the the plan here. That was the process. They would get to get the bones of the Dichi Muni, and then with the help of Vishvakarma, they could make that into a thunderbolt. And using that, they could, and then also Lord Vishnu said he's going to empower that weapon with his own prowess like that, and that would be what they could use to defeat Vritrasura. So also in that section there, where they approach the Dichi Muni, there's a very nice instruction that's given. And let's have a look at that. Oh, here it is. So Prabhupada says in the purport in that section where it's talking about this, it says, at the present moment, the entire world is in a dangerous position under the spell of a godless civilization. The Krishna conscious movement needs many exalted, learned persons who will sacrifice their lives, you know, like the Dichi knows. He was prepared to sacrifice his life for the, you know, to help the demigods like that. So it's Prabhupada saying here that similarly, that we need many exalted, learned persons to sacrifice their lives to revive the God consciousness throughout the world. We therefore invite all men and women advanced in knowledge to join the Krishna consciousness movement and sacrifice their lives for the great cause of reviving the God consciousness of human society. So that's Prabhupada's request there. And here a couple texts later in the next purport, Prabhupada says, one should join the Krishna conscious movement following the examples of such great personalities as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, and before them the great sage Dadichi. Instead of wasting one's life for temporary bodily comforts, one should always be prepared to give up one's life for better causes. After all, the body will be destroyed. Therefore, one should sacrifice it for the glory of distributing religious principles throughout the world. So they say the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. You know, so here Prabhupada's talking about how we have to be prepared to sacrifice our life, you know, for the spreading of the Krishna conscious movement. And when you hear that, you know, your response might be, you know, that's pretty heavy. Sacrifice my life? I mean, I'm not ready to sacrifice my life. I mean, like, and the Dichi Muni is the example here. They asked him to give up his bones. Well, you know, asking somebody to give up their bones, you know, means asking somebody to give up their life. And then Prabhupada's, you know, going on, he's making an analogy here that, and that similarly, we all have to sacrifice our life. But as I said, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. So, you know, maybe we're not prepared to do that. But we could preach. I mean, we could do a little something. We don't necessarily, if we're not prepared to completely sacrifice our life, at least we could start off by going out and on Harinams and distributing a few books and like that. And gradually what happens is as you kind of engage in those activities, you get absorbed, and hopefully eventually we'll be able to come to this stage where we'll have that consciousness, where we will be prepared to sacrifice our life for the spreading of the Krishna conscious movement. But initially, if we're not, that doesn't, you know, we shouldn't take that as get discouraged and just forget about the whole thing altogether. You know, this is out of my league. I'm just going to, you know, ignore this whole instruction. No, just start where we can. Like, I'll give you an example of this. Krishna very nicely gave me a line popped into my head about a week ago on Sankirtan, and it's a very good line, and everybody can use this, you know, for distributing books or just preaching to people in general. It's very simple. After you stop the person, I usually stop people by giving them a bit of a compliment. Like, I'll just say something like, hey, I like your hairstyle, same barber, you know, or whatever. Just some little compliment to stop the person. And when you get them stopped, I would say, hey, we're doing a survey out here today about happiness. And they go, okay. I say, so you can help us. And they go, okay. Students, this is mostly students I'm dealing with. And I say, do you think it's possible for a person to be happy in this, you know, in this day and age, in this world? And they say, mostly all of them, way over 90% would say, they think for a second and they go, yeah, I think it's possible for, they love talking about it. For some reason, everybody just likes this subject, you know? So they go, yeah, I think it's possible for a person to be happy. And then whoever I'm talking to, I look at them like, you know, I get real serious, I look at them right in the face and I say, are you happy? You know, are you happy? And they think for a second, they go, well, yeah, actually I'm happy, you know? Once again, 90% of them respond like that. You get a few thoughtful kids every day who kind of think about it and go, well, no, actually, I'm happy some of the time, but not all the time, or actually, no, I'm not really happy, but by and large, the vast majority of them say they're happy. And then, oh, actually, can somebody pass me a Bhagavad Gita real quick, off the shelf there? And then I just go, whatever they say, you know, if they, as I said, the vast majority of them say they're happy, so I just go, yeah, that's why I picked you. You look really happy. You know, you give them, take that opportunity to give them a bit of a compliment, flatter them a little bit to win them over. And then I hand them the book. If I haven't already done so, I give them the book. I say, yeah, see, this is the original teachings of inner happiness. And, you know, this was a favorite book of Thoreau, Emerson, Gandhi. Here, check this out. And I hand them the Bhagavad Gita, and I open to this verse, chapter 5, text 24. And I say, read that. And I show them, read it. It's very short. It says, it goes, one whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately he attains the Supreme. And then I have him read the purport. It said, unless one is able to relish happiness from within, how can one retire from external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? A liberated person enjoys happiness by factual experience. He can therefore sit silently at any place and enjoy the activities of life from within. So, you know, that's great, purport. I mean, that's like, it's, you know, it's generic. And knows anybody, whether they appreciate Krishna or not, can appreciate that. That makes a lot of sense, you know. So I have them read that, and as they're reading that, I say to them, I say, this is where it's at. This is the real stuff, you know. I say, this is what people are really looking for, you know. And they're reading it, and I can see they're appreciating it, you know. And then when I can see them, they look up, you know, when they finish reading it, they look up, and then I just go, so anyway, you know, people just give a donation. You're welcome to keep the book. Or if I could see they're a little bit, you know, kind of still a little bit edgy, I just say, hey, you heard of monks? And the way I say that, you know, what do you mean heard of monks? Everybody has heard of monks. Are you asking me if I know what a monk is? Guys intentionally say it that way so they get a little bit bewildered or confused. I say, you heard of monks? And they kind of look at me and I go, da-da-da-da. You know, and they laugh, you know. And I say, anyway, people just give a donation. Can you give a donation to help out? So the point is that, you know, Prabhupada's talking about here about people have to come forward and sacrifice their life for the spreading of the Krishna conscious movement. And of course we do, but, you know, it's not like it's got to be like torture. It doesn't. That's a lot of fun, actually. I mean, I look forward to going out on Sankirtan. I have more fun on, maybe I shouldn't say this. I was about to say I have more fun on Sankirtan than I do when I'm around the temple here. But it's fun. It's Vijay, is it? What do you think? Yeah. So it actually can be quite enlivening and, you know, you have a good time. It's not like it is. There's austerity for sure. There's austerity and there's tapasya and that's all there too. But at the same time, it's, you know, it's very enlivening. I mean, and in Lord Chaitanya's prayer, he says, Vijuvadu Jivanam, that Sankirtan is the life of transcendental knowledge and Anandam Buddhivardhanam, and it enables us to fully taste the nectar for which we're always anxious. So that's there too. You know, it's not, we shouldn't have this picture in our mind of it. Oh, I got to preach and I got to sacrifice my life for spreading Krishna consciousness and I got to give up my bones. No, it's not like exactly like that. You know, it's good. It's fun. You know, it can be fun and joyfully performed. There was that verse, Raja Vija Raja Guyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Prakyakshavagamam Dharmyam Sushukam Kartamavyam. It's joyfully performed. It's everlasting and it's joyfully performed. That's there too. That part of it is there as well. What time is it? 8:15? Oh, come on. Serious? Time flies when you're having fun. What can I say? Okay, well, I have a lot more to say, but I'll stop there because I'm out of time. Anybody have any questions or comments? That's about one-third the class. Yeah.
By contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment, and from that starts all the trouble. Sometimes we hear that people say that, you know, an ordinary father will keep all the items that are harmful to the children away, like drugs, some pills, fire, or chemical things that children might get hurt. So, in a similar way, sometimes how the Supreme Father will create something to, you know, cause too much trouble to his children, to all the living entities. And apparently this, because he also quote the verse that Krishna Bahir Mukha Bhogavan Chakari, that, you know, everything starts when you turn your face towards Krishna, in a place which originally is supposed to be everything perfect, and where ignorance or loss shouldn't even arise. So the question is there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, just like you gave that analogy of the parent and the child. So the parent is going to, has to discipline the child. That doesn't mean that they're going to destroy him. You know, like we don't have in Krishna consciousness, we don't have like eternal damnation. We don't have any idea of that, you know, that there's no time during at which the living entity gets absolutely destroyed. You know, but there is, sometimes you put in difficult situations, but it's for the purpose of learning, ultimately. You know, because Krishna wants loving service. He doesn't want slaves, robots. So, you know, we have to learn. And sometimes we have to learn through, it's called the school of hard knocks. So now they have the expression tough love. And sometimes that's what it takes for somebody to learn, that they, you know, have to revise their way of thinking, feeling, and behaving. So, you know, but nobody gets ultimately absolutely destroyed, and that's, so in that sense, it's, you know, Krishna is always merciful. There's always unlimited opportunities for people to rectify their mentalities and gradually, you know, come more into line and progress towards where they're going to have like that favorable relationship with Krishna again. We have a couple of hands went up, Archita and Suvas, or Suvas and Archita.
Just on that same analogy of the parent, Prabhupada used it as his own example, that when as a child, he was fascinated by the fan. You know, they have the fan spinning for cooling. He was always fascinated and wanted to touch it, and his father would always tell him no. So then one day the father intelligently decided to let him do it. He pulled the plug, so the fan was still spinning, not enough to hurt him, but enough to teach him a lesson. Then he said, okay. So he touched it, and he got hurt. And then after that he decided no. So Krishna's like that. He allows us to touch the fan, knowing that we're not going to get seriously hurt, because we're eternal, just like he is. But to learn the lesson, okay, go ahead and touch the material energy and see what happens. So that's where we are. But it's like Bhrigu said, he always gives the opportunity to get out.
Hi, thank you for a nice class, Bhrigu Padi Prabhu. I thought you made a very interesting point in the beginning of your class, and you spoke about authority. And I was just thinking from listening to a lot of lectures for the last couple of weeks by Prabhupada, how at one point we accept the authority of the spiritual master. Then Prabhupada made several points that never at one point should anyone think that one has surpassed his spiritual master. And that's on the principle of authority. So even in the material world, they have the principle of authority. Now, you know, you may know the police, you may know the law, but it doesn't mean that you surpass the authority or the law. In other words, this incident that you brought up, you know, never should we think that we're surpassing the authority, and we see that is why we stay in the material world. We stay in the material world because we defy authority, and that of course goes all the way up to the spiritual master. And what to speak of how we treat Krishna? Like Krishna, he's the supreme authority. The spiritual master is simply the representative of the Supreme Lord. So basically, when we defy the authority of the spiritual master, we're actually defying Krishna. You know, we're actually telling Krishna, hey, forget you. You know, if the spiritual master has enunciated so many authoritative issues in terms of practicing of Krishna consciousness, this is coming directly from the authority of the guru. The guru wants you to do this. The guru wants you to do this, this, this. There's so many do's and there's do nots. But we see that when we defy that authority, it not only means that you're defying the spiritual master, but you're directly treating Krishna the same way. And then what's really arrogant on our part is then we go before Krishna and say, Krishna, can you please help me? You know, in other words, am I making sense? I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? In terms of like authority, how we forget that whatever we're doing to authority in the world, we're actually thumbing Krishna at the same time. Yeah, so it goes all the way to the top, because the guru is the pure representative of the Supreme Lord. Just like the police, they're supposed to be the pure authority of the city government. They're empowered, they're enunciated to keep the peace, protect the citizens, give instruction, execute the law.
Yeah, you can't tell the police, oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's their call.
Exactly. It's like you can't tell the order of the spiritual master, oh, okay, I'll do it today, but tomorrow if I don't feel like it, it's cool.
Don't. You want to hear a quick story from my own experience, illustrate that point, or is it too late?
What's that?
I have a quick anecdote.
Please do so.
All right, so back in 1976, I was in the 340, in the temple in Manhattan, 340 West 55th 8th Avenue, and I was a Sankirtan devotee, and they just appointed a new Sankirtan leader. And, so he was the new Sankirtan leader. He was trying to get things, establish some organization and improve things. So he said, okay, everybody should stay out till 5 and, go out such and such a time and come back at 5. So in this, I was already a Sankirtan devotee then for about 3 years, and I'd been on traveling Sankirtan, and I felt like, okay, yeah, that's good. I mean, it's a nice rule, but, I've worked, 12 hours a day and 15 hours a day. I mean, I don't know, I understand the principle, but I could just figure out for myself when I should work and when. So I came back at about 4 o'clock or something like that. I knocked off early and I came back and I went down to the restaurant, which is in the bottom basement floor of the thing, and I went to get to see if there's any prasadam around. And I bumped into the Sankirtan leader and he says, hey, what's up? I said, it was very quiet out there. Nothing much was happening. I just thought I'd come back a little early and, do a bit of reading and, like that. He says, no, come on, go back out there. I remember everybody was supposed to stay out till 5. And I said, no, that's okay. It's not a good spot. So we went back and forth like that. And, he wanted me to go back out. And I was thinking come on, give me a break. Well, I'm a 3-year Sankirtan devotee, blah, blah, blah. So ultimately he asked a few times and eventually I just kind of blew him off basically. I didn't do it. I didn't go back out. And, he was upset. He didn't, it's Krishna consciousness, you don't grab somebody by the shirt and punch him or something like that, but he didn't appreciate that. So then, he just, from that he got a certain opinion of me. I mean, we knew each other for a long time already, but so then a bunch of time passed and, then it came time we went to India, for the Mayapur Festival in 1976. And, devotees were coming. There's a group of us there. And the devotees from my temple, from New York temple, approached me saying, hey, are you getting second initiation? I say, well, I don't know. He said, well, are you on the list? I said, nobody said anything to me. He says, well, there's a list. I said, well, who's making the list? And it was that devotee. So I went to that devotee. And I said, hey, I heard so-and-so is getting second initiation and so-and-so is getting a second initiation. And, so what do you think? Can I get second initiation? And these devotees were not Sankirtan devotees and they were newer devotees than me. I'd already been a devotee then by that time by about 3 years. So I said, what about me? He said, well, no, I don't think you're ready. I said, what do you mean? He said, I don't think you're ready. And, basically I had to beg and harass him for 45 minutes, pretty much, to get my name on the list. I just kind of it was too much to not. I shouldn't have done what I did even, but it was just like I knew that this is 1976. This could be my last chance, to get second and get the initiation from Prabhupada. So I just said I had to pull out all the stoppers and do everything I could to get him to agree. And he reluctantly agreed, and he stuck my name on the list. So that's an example how I was thinking, I know, I can decide what's okay as far as Sankirtan rules and regulations go, but it's not my call. He was a Sankirtan leader. I should have respected, I should have deferred to his position and authority. And even, when I went to get second initiation, when it came time to get it, after the Jagya, Prabhupada had all the devotees go up to his room in the Lotus Building. He had that little room. And all of us who were getting second initiation were sitting outside. There's about 13 or 14 of us, and we all went in one at a time. And Prabhupada, and then when the devotees came out, we'd ask, the devotee who came out, so what happened? What happened? And they'd say something like, oh, Prabhupada asked me, what do you do, and what's your service, and what does your father do, and like that, And And I was one of the last ones. I was like, you know, maybe, you know, second to third to last or something like that. So I was thinking, wow, this is going to be really good. This is going to be great. Prabhupada's going to ask me, what's my service? And I'm going to tell him I'm a Sankirtan devotee. And he's going to ask me, what does your father do? And I say, my father manages an electronics company. You know, he's going to really think, whoa, this is I really got a good disciple here, you know? So I went in there, and it was my turn, and I sat down next to Prabhupada. And it was like Prabhupada would say, sitting here, and I was kneeling down next to Prabhupada, that close as this little table is here, you know? And Prabhupada said, okay, so just follow me, you know? So he said, he took out his hand, he said, do like this. And he was showing me how to count on the fingers, you know, like when you do the Brahman's Gayatri Mantra. So he did it, and he said, okay, you do it. And I did what I thought I saw Prabhupada do. And he went, no, watch again. So I said, okay. So Prabhupada did it again. I said, okay. And I was really trying to watch carefully, you know. He said, okay, now you do it. I went, okay. I did what I thought Prabhupada did, you know. And he looked at me again, and he said, what are you, stupid? Like that. Almost that loud. I maybe exaggerate a little bit, but he was like, whoa. And I just kind of like, again, freaked out. I didn't know what to do. What do I do? And I just started apologizing profusely. I'd never been talked to Prabhupada or at all, ever, nothing. And I said, sure, Prabhupada, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. I guess this is the first time I've ever been in your like physical presence, and I guess I'm just nervous, and I couldn't pay attention. I begged him. I said, please just show me one more time, and I'll pay very careful attention. I promise I'll get it right, you know. And he didn't, it wasn't like, okay, I understand. It was just like, okay, watch now. Still very stern, you know, and he goes, I was praying to Krishna like anything. I was praying to Lord Chaitanya, please, please let me get this right, you know. I don't want to get kicked out of the movement when I'm getting my second initiation here or something. So I was praying like anything, and then so Papa did it again, and then he said, okay, now do it. And I did, but I thought I did this the first two times, but anyway, I guess I got it right because he didn't yell at me again. So then I got that done, you know. And then he goes, okay, now repeat after me. And he goes, he has the sheet out with the mantra. And he goes, Om, I go, Om, Bo, Bava, Bava, Swat. And he went through the first two mantras, and when he got about halfway through the third mantra, he just, it was actually a small room, and Pushtakrishna, who was his sannyasi secretary at the time, he was over on the other side of the room. And he went like this, after about halfway through the third mantra of Prabhupada saying it and then me saying it, he went like this. He didn't look at me, I was right there next to him, he just went like that. And Pushtakrishna said to me from across the room, he said, okay, you can go now. I said, but Prabhupada hasn't finished. And he looked up at me, like, kind of very sad and apologetic. He said, well, I'm sorry, he's indicated that he's finished. And I just went, okay. I just figured, wow, I'm so offensive. My spiritual master can't even finish giving me the Gayatri Mantra, you know. And what could I say? I couldn't say anything. I just had to pay my obeisances, and I just kind of like crawled out backwards. I just crawled out of the room backwards, you know. And I just felt about like, but it's just my speculation. But I kind of, to this day, I tie those two things together. You know, the way I treated that Sankirtan leader and how I, you know, had to, and even the way I got put on the list. I just, you know, because Krishna's a super soul, obviously, and Prabhupada's the pure devotee is the external manifestation of the super soul. So I always made that connection, you know, that there's a connection between my attitude towards the Sankirtan leader and then what happened to me when I was actually there with Prabhupada. Maybe not. But anyway, it's just, you know, you have to be very humble and submissive to authorities. That's the proper way to do things. Anyway, Grantarat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Huh?
I got it at exactly the same time.